Hi, everybody. I'm Mary Ann, a compulsive overeater and food addict. And thank you for inviting me to be here tonight. And I've been in program. It'll be 6 years on July 11th, and I've lost 106 pounds, and the time has gone by like that. You know, I came in to lose the weight, get the diet, and be gone. And my life has just changed in just so many ways. It's been absolutely incredible. And thinking back, you know, and thinking about, you know, talking to you all tonight, I probably knew I loved food more than the average bear when I was in first grade. And I remember they used to sell a snack for 5 cents, and it was in a little cellophane bag. And I remember thinking, I want two. One was not enough. And I remember having that conscious thought. And I took comfort in the fact that there was only one child in the classroom who was bigger than I was. And I was, you know, very aware of his presence. And when he would be out sick, I would be upset, because then I was the biggest kid left in the class. And that's like what I remember of first grade. I grew up in a suburb of Boston, and I was the third of three children. My sister was 10 years older, my brother was 8 years older, and then there was me. And my mother was an alcoholic, and she also suffered from depression, which I know now, I didn't know then. And my dad, who is still alive today, he's going to be 90 years old, God willing, in September, he was kind of like the mother, the father. I remember him taking me shopping and kind of the doer. And, you know, my mother did the best that she could. And I was a heavy, you know, kid in grade school. Remember being taunted and, you know, all that goes along with being, you know, an obese child. And my son has struggled with his weight too, and he's not as big as I was as a kid, but he still, you know, will get taunted. And when I hear of him being taunted, like, things come back to me. And like, the longer I'm not eating, the more I remember of those horrible experiences. But anyway, I was fat, there's no other word for it. And took a lot of comfort in the food, and I had a best friend who lived across the street, and I remember sleeping over her house, and I couldn't tell you where we slept, but I could tell you what the mother served. And I remember the food. And she was my best friend, and she was also chubby. And my first experience with, you know, Weight Watchers and that thing is when her mother took us when we were kind of like prepubescent. But I was heavy, you know, through grade school. And then when I got into middle school, you know, the taunting and the peer pressure really became horrendous. And I had a couple of good girlfriends, but, you know, I was really tormented by one girl in particular who, you know, I still think about. I don't know, she always flashes into my mind. Like, I wonder what she's doing now, and I'd love to bump into her. And she really absolutely tormented me. And when she would torment me, she would get other kids to laugh. And, I, you know, that's like what I remember of that experience. And then when I hit high school, I remember thinking, I'm not doing this anymore. And I think that's when my history of starving myself and almost anorexia came into play. When I was in high school, I would go days and days and days and not eat at all. And I was able to get my weight down, you know, probably to like a 14, 16. I was never thin by any means, but it was certainly manageable, and I was able to have a social life and date and go to the proms and, you know, all that went along with that. But I remember either eating or not eating. I would either be on or off, eating all day or eating nothing at all. And that really began, you know, my path with trying to figure out how I could possibly manage my weight. So high school, got through it. First year of college, when I was in high school, my mother died, and I was left living with my dad, and she died at 49 of pancreatic cancer, which I found out after the fact, I guess, is somewhat, I don't know if this is appropriate, but alcohol-related, I think it may be, but so she died at 49, and that was really difficult, and when it came time for college, I decided to commute to a school nearby so that I could continue to live with my dad, and that turned out to be a very good thing, because that's why I met my husband, but that's a little bit later on. And I commuted to college, and my first year of college, I found a picture a couple of years ago. I probably gained 60 or 70 pounds the first semester, not even the first year, because it was like a change and left all my friends, and just, it was the only way I could cope with change. And I gained all kinds of weight, and I remember thinking, no, because I loved to be social, and I loved friends and boyfriends and dating and fun, and I wasn't having it when I was fat, and that was more painful for me than the comfort I took in the food. So I remember second semester freshman year started, like, not eating. Days, 3 or 4 days I would go and eat nothing. And then part of my story is, for whatever reason, I got on hot dogs and cauliflower, and that's all I ate, and I lost weight, and I was pretty normal sized through college, for the most part, eating hot dogs and cauliflower, and, you know, funny, there was no flour or sugar in those products for the most part, but anyway, I did that, and kept my weight down to, you know, a reasonable number. So I got through college, went into the working world. I ended up getting married to somebody that I had met in college, which turned out to be a very good thing. We'll be married 25 years in September. And so like, the longer I don't eat, the better he gets. And we got married, and there's a picture of me on my wedding day, and I either weighed 131 or 133, and I remember being embarrassed to walk down the aisle because I thought I was so obese. It's like I had no conception of, like, what I looked like at all, just totally skewed image of myself. And I still have trouble sometimes now, you know, just like, well, what do I look like? And, you know, there's a picture of me in a pair of white pants, and I think I weigh close to 280. And I'm thinking, do I look like that now? It's just the way I think. But anyway, got married, probably gained 10 or 11 pounds on the honeymoon. It was like, phew, I can stop starving myself. And every year I just gained a little bit more weight. And I had a pregnancy in 1983. I gained 92 pounds. And, you know, got most of it off. Then I was kind of like 160, 170. And then in 1988, I had another pregnancy. I gained like 91 pounds. And I remember the, you know, OB doctor saying to me, because he knew I had a problem with food, saying to me, you need to eat. You're carrying a life. No messing around. You need to eat. And I remember, great, I can eat. So when I was pregnant, I ate probably not as much as I wanted, but I ate enough to gain like almost 100 pounds in 6 months. And that wasn't like all I could have done. I could have done more easily. So anyway, second pregnancy, 1988, gained all that weight. And after that, I had a harder and harder time getting it off. At this point, I was like over 200 pounds. And tough time getting rid of the weight. And my son had a lot of issues. He had learning issues, and he had a whole bunch of other issues. And we weren't sure quite what was wrong with him. And I remember taken him from one specialist to the other, and we had a misdiagnosis of autism, and we had one doctor, we had to go through this whole thing for a month. They thought he was deaf, and we had all these things surrounding, like trying to figure out what was wrong with this kid. And I just remember I needed the food. I needed to eat during that period of time. And my husband is very, very low-key. And, you know, he doesn't see a problem unless there's, like, a fire in front of you. And I just somehow felt all that was on me. And, you know, it's very painful to think that you have a child that is going to have a tough time, especially when you're not abstinent and you want to put a square child in a round hole, as I call it. And that's all I wanted to do to him. Rather than accept his gifts and accept his weaknesses, I wanted to stuff him in a mold that would make him like Joe Average Kid. And he isn't. Thank you, God, he isn't, because he's really unique and he's really, really special. And I can see that today. And that's another gift of the program. But kind of fast forward, I went through this with this child. I had to stop my full-time job, and I had the isolation of being at home. I couldn't get into the at-home thing because I'm not crafty. I don't cook. I don't do anything. I don't even know how to clean well. And I was, like, home with these kids, which I found to be extremely boring and unrewarding. And then the financial hardship of not having a second income, it was like, it was not a good thing, you know. And I give credit to people who can take care of children full-time, because I wasn't creative enough to make it, you know, interesting for them or interesting for me. And that just did not work. So I ended up staying home for a couple of years and gained like a lot of weight. And, you know, all the while, Weight Watchers, Diet Workshop, Jenny Craig, you know, always trying and just could never get a handle on it. And I reached my top weight probably 7 years ago. And I have arthritis, and I had tremendous physical pain. And, you know, people talk about what drove them to, like, that point of desperation. And people talk about, I was isolated, I had no friends, I was eating alone in my house. Well, that was not my story. I was out there and I was social. What brought me here was the physical pain of the arthritis and an extra 100 pounds banging on the joints. And I've had two surgeries already, and I have probably two more to come for joints that have degenerated from the arthritis. And I can't even imagine where I would be if I had pounded those joints for another 6 years with, you know, 100 pounds. So anyway, I kind of lost track of where I was. Trying to diet, couldn't do it, and the pain of the arthritis. And I had a friend who had come into this program and lost 100 pounds. And I asked her, what do you do? And she told me all about what she did. And I thought, are you kidding me? No way. And when she told me what her food plan was, I thought, well, what do you eat? Because I don't eat that, nor would I ever. And I had to watch her be thin and healthy and happy for a year before I picked up the phone and called her. And I my plan when I called her was just to get the food plan. And when she answered the phone, I started crying. And she said, what's the matter? And I said, I don't know. I just don't know. And she said, I'll pick you up Sunday morning. You're going to this great meeting. And Sunday morning, I was ready. And I was in my size 24 dungaree jumper and thought I looked swell. And she picked me up and took me to the meeting. And I got a sponsor right there that day. And she said to me, have you had your breakfast yet? And I said, no. Like, who would eat before noon? And I said, no. And she said, what do you have in the house? And I told her, and we worked out a food plan for that day. She said, eat this today and call me tomorrow at 5:45. And I said, in the morning? She said, yep. So I said, okay, and I did. And I called, and I was on time. And things just started to get better and better and better. It was not easy. It was absolutely not easy, and I did my share of whining and complaining and questioning. And one thing I've learned is I don't intellectualize what I do. Because if I think about the program, I want to dissect it and change it and tailor it to me. But you know what? My way did not work. My way, I could gain 100 pounds in 6 months as I did twice. This way, I have a food plan every single day, and I follow it, and if I don't follow it, I make a phone call. And it's that simple. And I have to keep it that simple in order to maintain the willingness to do this one more day. But in addition to losing the weight, which has been terrific, in addition to the diminished pain, which has been terrific, the other big, big thing for me has been seeing my life as it is, rather than I wish it to be, or I fantasize it to be, or I think it should be. And, you know, I was talking last night with some folks at a meeting about, you know, always wanting different stuff or more stuff or a different house or a different car. It's like that is becoming so much further away from where my thought process goes. It's just amazing. And I just came back from a family vacation, and my husband said to me, what was the best part of the vacation for you? And we had to do some dancing with the food. It was, we had gone out of the country, and I had some difficulties getting what I needed. And he said to me, what was the best part of the vacation for you? And I remembered a moment in a hotel room that our two grown children were playing cards together, and my husband and I were like laying across the bed watching them and kind of joking with them and stuff. And he says, we could have done that on Route 1 in Saugus. And I said, you know what? That was the best part of the vacation for me. It wasn't what I bought. You know, it wasn't the hotel we stayed in. You know, it was that I could see that I have two healthy, wonderful children. Are they exactly the way I think they should be? Today, yes. Before program, no. I wanted to change them and mold them and, you know, control them and churn them, and just like I wanted to do that to my husband. You know, he's a great, great guy. Has he got his idiosyncrasies? Absolutely. But he is a good man, and I can see that today. And when he has, you know, his things, I just step back. You know, like when we're getting ready for this trip, we're getting ready to go away, he cleans the house. I said, we're going away. Why don't you pack? But he just has this thing. And you know what? I let him do it. I came home to a nice clean house. It was great. Rather than having us getting ready to go on a trip and me yelling at him, you should be doing this. It's like I can let him be him, and hopefully I can let my kids be, you know, who they are. And what does that have to do with the food? Everything. Absolutely everything. I'm grateful for the life I have today as it is. And it's beyond what I thought it would ever be. And it's certainly not as I planned it to be. But, you know, I never thought putting down the food would allow me to be happy with, you know, who I am and what I have. So I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to talk to you all. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. That's my message, because I couldn't stop eating for 10 minutes. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mary Ann. I'm a compulsive reader and addict.
Mary Ann.
And this is my story. I'll pass my pictures. When I'm stuck, I usually just think about what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I'll skip over the what I used to be like part. One word could just describe it as rage and horror and rage. And that was pretty much what my life was like. If I wasn't outwardly angry, I was inwardly angry, which is being depressed. And you know, that was most of my life. I got into OA about 19 years ago, and this September I will be 6 years abstinent. So I've had quite a little career of fighting the food and fighting this program. I'm one of those people that thought that I was terminally unique and that the same rules that seemed to apply to everybody else didn't apply to me, because I was separate, I was different, I was smarter, I was I just wasn't like everyone else. And I really bucked that for a long time when a sponsor would say, "You're just another bozo on the bus." I would hate that, because I thought, no, you don't know. I am different. I skipped a grade. I skipped the fourth grade, and I graduated early from high school, don't you know? And you know, I was an awful lot of intellectual pride, and thinking that, you know, that makes a difference. That makes a difference. Well, I'm here to say it does not make any difference whether you're smart or dumb, or brilliant, or college educated, or, you know, grade school educated. This disease is the same for everybody. And in fact, some of us that like to analyze and know everything that's happening, sometimes it's harder on us, I believe, because I never could take anybody's word for anything. I was always one of those hard-headed people that said, "Well, I'm going to try and find out for myself." I never listened to the people at the front of the room saying, "Let me have done the pain for you." I can remember so many people saying that. I never got what it meant. I never understood. Well, now I'm one of the people that has done the pain. And the only way I could learn was by doing the pain. Because the pain, to me, anyway, the pain was a wonderful teacher. It taught me that this is a disease, which for years I fought that idea. It taught me that not only is it a disease, I have it. And, you know, that was a big sinking feeling, too, because when I finally embraced that, it was years in program. It was years of being around program, in program, keeping people at arm's length and also keeping this program at arm's length, because it just was, it was easier. It was easier than getting intimate with people. It was easier than letting people in, being vulnerable, taking risks, etc. I've come a long way in this program. I still have a long way to go. The biggest thing I think I've gotten out of this, besides the weight loss, I was 152 when I came in, and I'm 118 now, and I've been that for about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. The weight loss was nice, but that wasn't, the thing that I got the most was learning how the heck to trust. Because I never thought that I was a very suspicious person when I came in here, and I thought that everyone had an agenda. Why else would anybody want to help me? You know, they must have an agenda. And I tested sponsors like you wouldn't believe. You know, sometimes I wouldn't call the sponsor. Then the next day I'd call, and she'd say, "Why didn't you call?" And I'd say, "Because I didn't want to call." And I thought that that was a valid reason. And, you know, why I wasn't dumped more often than I was, I don't know. But that's the, you know, and I wasn't dumped. And I was like, "Oh, you passed the test. Okay, you're not going to dump me if I do stupid things. What about if I eat?" I didn't try that too often, because I was afraid of sponsors. I was afraid of sponsors, especially my first one. I can remember those times in the morning, first calling her, sweaty palm, gripping the phone, silence on the other end, and heart pounding. And And that was, you know, that was boot camp for me. And I needed that. If I had had somebody who was, okay, Marianne, let's take you gently by the way, fear worked for me. Fear was something that worked for me. I was scared when I came in here. And I needed to have some sense knocked into me. And fear did great. Fear was great. Fear did not work. Ultimately, you know, in the long run, fear does not work. I needed something better than fear. And the best thing that I found in here, besides the weight loss, is finding God. Finding God and finding out that I can trust and depend on God. For years in this program, I thought that I was really the one who wasn't eating. You know, and people who said, ask God for help or thank you, God, that was just something to say. That wasn't real. People didn't really. That was in my head. That was what I thought when I heard that. And I adopted the same lingo. Oh, thank you, God. And, oh, I ask God for help. And inwardly, I can remember seething, thinking, it's not that easy. It's not that easy. Because at the time, I was still trying to hang on and do it my way. And my way doesn't work. My way doesn't work. I needed a lot of years of hammering my head against the wall and hammering the food against me in order to realize that that doesn't work. The tools are meant to be worked to make sure that I have an easy abstinence. God does not want me to have white knuckle abstinence. God, that's not what God's into. God's not into, okay, just try harder and it will be great. I have to stop trying so hard and start trusting. And it was hard to do. It was really hard to do. And I know I couldn't have done it without God's help. And even today, I know that I can't weigh and measure my food without God's help. You know, it's not that it's automatic and I just do it without thinking about it. I do it thanks to the grace of God. Because, you know, the previous speaker said she couldn't do it, not eat for 10 minutes. Me too. Me too. I could not go for 10 minutes. My idea of diets, quote-unquote diets, before I came to this program, was trying to not eat between breakfast and lunch. That was just about as much as I could make. And I am really, really grateful that I found this program. And, you know, when I finally got abstinence down pat, and it took many years, that did not mean, okay, now all my problems are solved and my solutions are great and I don't have any more problems. You know, I have a wonderful husband. I've been married almost 25 years. I've got 3 children, a granddaughter, and another one on the way, another grandson. I think it's a grandson on the way. And, you know, in the midst of all that, they all have life problems, every single one of them. It's not like, oh, everything is great. There's stresses, there's worries, there's incidents, there's happenings, and through it all, I ask God for help and recognize that shoving food in my mouth is not going to make any of those problems go away or even get better. You know, at one time, the food would make things better. For me, early on, the food did. It gave me oblivion. After it stopped giving me oblivion, and I still didn't have the solution, or still wasn't willing to accept the solution, and still kept on eating, there's nothing more horrible than having to eat, not wanting to, but having to. There's nothing worse than that. And I don't ever want to have to go back there. And you know what? I don't have to. I don't have to go back there. This recovery, I believe, is the best recovery that I have, and I'm really grateful that I know who's the boss this time around, you know, and it's not me. I'm not the one who's stopping the eating. I do my little 2%, 1% by working my tools, but God does the heavy lifting. God is the one that does the heavy lifting. And what a relief that is. I never knew that I could truly, truly depend on him for something like that. I was brought up Catholic. I still am. But I had a very immature idea about God. God only takes care of big deals. God does not do little things, and you don't dare ask him either. And that's not true. That's not true. God is not my fuzzy friend. God is God. And best of all, he's in control. He's in the driver's seat. And I don't have to be second-guessing him and saying, you know, looking over, oh, wait a minute, you have to turn this way, and oh, you have to turn. I don't have to do that for him. He knows the way. He knows the way. He made the car. It's not a mystery to him. It's a mystery to me. And, you know, I can still get caught up in worries and thinking about the future. And all I need to do when that stuff comes up is ask God for help. And sometimes I have to ask God for help every 5 minutes. Sometimes every minute. When a big panicky thing comes up, I've got to really ask God for help. That frequently. And I used to think that was a badge of, oh, that's terrible. That's something to be ashamed of. It's not the way of weakness today. It really isn't. It's the way I get, I tap the strength that's much more beyond me. And I'm really grateful. I'm grateful that I don't have to be angry 24 hours a day. I'm the type of person, I used to drive into gas stations, and the gas station attendant would say, smile, you know, because with the corners of my mouth always turned down. And I wasn't even aware of it. I was not even aware of it. It was just, and sometimes I'd go by a mirror, and I'd look and say, boy, I look mad. And I wouldn't even be aware of it. But, you know, I was. And today, I can feel myself smiling. I can see my granddaughter and smile so automatically. At my daughter's wedding, I remember the difference between my wedding and my daughter's wedding. My wedding, I was on edge the entire time. You know, I was just so nervous and extremely self-conscious and embarrassed about my body. And talk about body image, you know, I weighed less than I do now. And I was embarrassed of how fat I was. And at my daughter's wedding, I was relaxed. I didn't yell at anybody. You know what a miracle that is? To not be like, you know, there wasn't one instance of snapping at anybody or being angry. Now, that's a true miracle. You know, for somebody who's micromanaging and, you know, into stuff, especially my daughter's wedding, my only daughter's wedding, oh my, it was wonderful. And I had a good time. I didn't have a good time at my wedding. I had a wonderful time at my daughter's, and so did everybody else. I didn't have to ruin it for anybody, which I have done in the past. I've ruined, you know, I used to think, oh, I'm just so unassuming, and I don't say boo, and I'm so shy and everything, but I had my way of ruining an event just by the look on my face, and I don't have to do that today. And I'm really grateful for that. My granddaughter, who, you know, when she was born, I wasn't that great with my kids. You know, I was not the type of mommy that crawled around on the floor and was able to do googly and, you know, I didn't know how to do it. I mean, I did the best I could. But when my granddaughter was born, my husband was the type who did that sort of thing. And so I assumed when my granddaughter was born, you know, it was going to be the same thing all over again. He'd be crawling on the floor with her, and I'd be sort of aloof and step back. That little girl is the light of my life, and I lose every ounce of self-consciousness that I have when I'm with her. It is incredible. It is incredible, the joy that I get to feel today, just because I'm not shoving food in my mouth. Just because I get to put food on a scale and I get to say, okay, this much and no more. There was a Columbo episode, you know, the Columbo, the rain-coated detective, and there was a episode where the guy was talking about whiskey, and he said he'd hold his fingers up and say, this much and no more. And that's what I do today. You know, this much and no more. And that no more. I'm not giving up anything. I'm getting. I'm getting and getting and getting and getting. And it's miraculous. It's miraculous, the things that have been given to me. Very quickly, my father died about three or four years ago. He had a stroke, and one of his biggest regrets was the fact that he was not able to stop my uncle from molesting me. He, unbeknownst to my father, my uncle molested me when I was a kid, and it all came out years later, and my father was guilty. You know, he felt guilty that he didn't protect his little girl. And so he would always tell me that every time we saw him. Oh, I wish I had stopped that. I wish I had known, blah, blah, blah. And then he had the stroke, and he was debilitated. And he lived for 18 months after the stroke. Well, about 10 months, a year after he had the stroke, he told me the story about how my uncle came to see him. And my mother's looking at me, and she said, he didn't go see him. It was my brother. And because of my father's diminished capacity, you know, with his sight and his ears and, you know, his cognizant skills, he didn't know that it was my brother. He thought it was my uncle coming to see him in the nursing home. And so my brother, for God knows what reason, and I do say God knows what reason, played along. And he had a conversation with him saying, Art, my father, Art, you could have never stopped me. There was nothing that you could have done. I'm a sick bastard. Sorry. And, I'm really sorry. And my father ended up forgiving him, forgiving my uncle. And that was something he said, I'll never do. And a few months after that, his capacity diminished more. And that little window closed. Now, if that had not happened at that time, my father would have died with so much hatred in his heart. My father was telling me this story, and he was crying, and he's saying, that poor SOB, you know, he's really a sick guy, and I felt so bad for him. And I was like, thank you, God. Thank you, God. I asked my brother, whatever possessed you to do that? He said, I just thought it was the thing to do. You know, that's the kind of thing that God does, you know. Free and clear, not like, okay, I didn't write out a list. Okay, can you please let Dad think that John is my uncle? And, you know, who could tell? Who could tell? That's the kind of gift God gives me. And he's fantastic. He's fantastic. He's done so much for me. And he keeps me on the straight and narrow. And my faith in him has increased because, you know, I remember reading in a book once, you know, I'm from Missouri, you have to show me the show me state. I'm one that has to be shown. I have to be shown. I have to have proof. I have to have it right in front of me, and I have to have it in my life, not in your life. I didn't need it from your life. I needed it in my life. So I've done a lot of pain, but I've gotten so much joy, and I'm just really grateful. Thank you.